And my guest today is college basketball coach, former NBA coach as well, scout Clay Mosier. Clay, thanks for stopping by, and I appreciate it, coach, for taking the time to talk to me today about your career, about your aspirations and everything.
Appreciate you having me, Neil. This is big time. I love it.
How did it all start for you, Clay? Kind of go deep into basketball. Was that your sport always?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in small rural Minnesota and Nebraska towns. I've lived in every single upper Midwestern state there is, both Dakotas, Minnesota. I went to school, college in Wisconsin, Iowa. Looks like I covered Nebraska. I've covered that whole part of the world. And where I grew up, Neil, like, if you just played whatever sport was in season. So you played in it, and it was very defined where I was from. In the upper Midwest, the weather dictates a lot of what you do. So baseball was in the summer, and football was in the fall, and basketball was in the winter, and then track was in the spring. And I actually participated in all four of those at some point. And that's just kind of how you rolled. If you went the athlete route, which I love sports. I love all sports. I follow all of them, and you just played whatever was in season. You know, today, and you were just talking about, you know, you're training for wrestling. In my day, you didn't have individual development time. Like, you just jumped,
Right. And then I played high school basketball, 1 year of high school football. And my coach is like, and this is where, before I knew I could put size on, I'm a 6'10" legitimate, but I was a lanky kid, didn't know I could put up on 300 plus pounds. Left football and went basketball route because the coach says you have a better chance to play college in basketball. And so I played at Sarah Catholic out in the Pittsburgh area. And then, so I understand exactly what you're talking about. Professional wrestling, well, I would say training for that, it's almost like it's the minor leagues, like The Rock. The Rock got two, you know, rings and flew them in. I'm not at that level with this documentary, but ultimately, you know, retraining, trying to get back in shape in my 20s. But going back to you, and your whole process. So basketball, was your best sport you played?
No, what I was best at was baseball, actually. Like, that was what I was, I'm built more for that. I'm about 6 foot now. I'm getting older now, Neil, so I'm shrinking a little bit. But I haven't shrunk yet,
and I'm 51. I'm shocked I haven't shrunk yet.
Yeah, I'm shrinking a little bit. I hate to admit it, but I am. But in the day, I was 6'1". I weighed about 170 pounds when I played in college. But basketball is what I really loved, and I played at a junior college in Minnesota, and then I played NAIA basketball in Minnesota at a place called Winona State, which is now a Division II, but in those days it was an NAIA school. But when I'm not on one of the world's biggest podcasts, I just tell them it was Division II because nobody's going to go back and look. But no, that's not true. So then I knew, you know, like every kid, I had dreamed of playing professionally, and, you know, dreamed of being on TV and all that kind of stuff. And when I realized that wasn't going to happen as a player, I just naturally kind of just migrated into coaching, and coached with my junior college coach, who's still the best coach I've ever been around in my life, regardless of level. And a lot of my philosophy and my process in terms of how I approach relationships and athletes and that sort of thing all stemmed from him. And this was back in the early 1980s, honestly. But I just talked to him, a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we still stay in touch.
Then this is the thing that people understand is you have an opportunity after you play, if you're not going to go to the pros. Like when I was in D3, they were already kind of priming some of our players. The coach at Western Maryland was connected to Mike Krzyzewski over to Duke, and some of the guys were going to the camps. Some of them ended up playing for the Washington Generals after 4 years of college basketball. So there's only certain options for you at that time. And basically, if you're going to want to continue, you're going to coach. And once you got into coaching, as I'm going to tell you, because you played NAIA and you coached at the highest levels, I think you're a better coach than player. You would definitely agree to that.
No, there's no doubt. There's no doubt I'm a better coach than I was a player. But I'll tell you something crazy, Neil, is the first Division I basketball game I ever saw, I coached in.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Because where I grew up, you know, we weren't pumping out Division I athletes, much less Division I basketball players. There were some good hockey players that came out of my high school. But when I got hired at NC State by Jim Valvano in 1987.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I worked for him. I worked for him part-time for 3 years, and then I worked for him full-time for 2 years. And the first game that we played was the first Division I game I'd ever seen in person.
Oh, my goodness. So because you never saw one. So how did you get in the coaching ranks to get to Jimmy V? Because we it looks like we could talk for hours. You got to write a book. I'm already going to tell you this right now. If you've not written a book,
it's on my to-do list, but maybe you can help. Maybe you can push me off the cliff. And
I'm going to push you totally off the cliff, especially with Jimmy V and all that stuff. If you're going to go out in the speaking tour, that's for sure. But you know, how did you get to North Carolina State?
So in those days, how you did it was, and this actually goes back to my junior college coach, whose name is Dave Retzloff that I referenced. And, you know, he said to me one day, and I was somewhat of a troubled youth, you know, that I'm sure I was high maintenance for him at some point. And I didn't really know it at the time, but I know it now. And I went to him and he said, well, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, I want to be a Division I basketball coach. And honestly, Neil, he was the first one that I had told that didn't laugh at me. And he just said, well, here's what I know you have to do is that he goes, I was never that level doesn't fascinate me. I don't want to be away from home that much, you know, and all those sorts of things. He said, but you need to get out and meet people now. And that's how he phrased it. And I remember that distinctly because now it's networking. But networking wasn't a word in the early 1980s. Like, you didn't use that word. He said, you just have to go meet people. So what I honestly did was I just, and at ESPN started, I believe, broadcasting basketball in 1980. I'm a 1981 graduate. So it was just seeing more and more basketball on television was relatively new.
Right.
And, what I did is I just plucked out my favorite college basketball coaches around the country and I wrote them good old fashioned letters and sent them letters and said, I'd like to come work your camp. You know, here's the resume I have so far. I had not a very stellar playing career, but I played.
Right.
And I was already into my coaching career with my junior college coach at where he was. So I had something to offer in terms of just being a camp counselor. I'm talking about folding t-shirts and sweeping the floor and you know, running the concession stand and checking kids into dorms. This isn't high level. Like, I'm not preparing to win the, you know, game in the Final Four.
Right.
I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. And in those days, that's how you did it.
And so, I think that's what I was talking about, Western Maryland, how some of these kids were looking to do it so they can get an assistant job or something out of there. Or
So it became my, and I did that for three straight summers and it became my summertime job, honestly.
Okay.
And there wasn't a lot of money in it, but what you did get out of it was, first of all, I can still track a great deal of my network to those days.
Wow.
And guys that I'm still in touch with that I worked a camp 1 week at Georgia Tech with, I'm still friends with them on Facebook and we'll message each other once in a while and they'll see.
Can you name drop some of the Georgia Tech people, you know?
Well, Bobby Kremins was the head coach there at the time.
Okay.
And he was the Mark Price was still there and John Sally was there. And
Mark Price and John Sally, I love, you know, especially look at Mark Price. We're going to talk about specifically enough. I'm a huge Cleveland Cavs fan, even when LeBron came, but
what a great player Mark Price was. And he doesn't get the credit for it. Great player. So what I did, Neil, was I literally traveled from camp to camp to camp. So over the course of time, I worked at LSU. I worked at Georgia Tech. I worked at North Carolina. I worked at NC State, both men's and women's, both for Hall of Fame coaches, one in Jim Valvano and Kay Yao is in the Hall of Fame as well. And was the 1996 gold medal winning coach for our women's basketball team. I worked the camp at Syracuse. I worked at Holy Cross. I worked at North Dakota State. I worked at the University of North Dakota. So I would just travel from place to place.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot of money. Like, they'd pay you $200, but you got a place to sleep and they would feed you.
Yeah.
And they would feed you. And then, you know, the camp would end on Friday and you have to get to the next place. And a lot of people know this story about me, but I'm guessing a lot more will know now is I used to hitchhike from camp to camp. A lot, because I had zero money.
My God.
And I would just get on the interstate, I'd get on the road, and I would just go. My wife thinks I'm completely insane. And I'm telling her, she'll go, well, how are you going to get there? Even today, I go, well, I'll just hitchhike. She goes, you can't hitchhike. I said, no, nobody's going to harm you. Like, first of all, if you're out there as a, like a single, fairly well put together person, you don't look like a, you know, that you just escaped from the local penitentiary. People, like, people are still good people, but I, part of my book, Neil, will be, I can go through the psychology and the candidates that will pick up a single male hitchhiker. I can tell you right now who they are.
All right. So, I mean, I need 62 parts, and I guess this is where we're going to write the book together. I already feel it. So let's just jump to areas I want to cover just in this interview. Number one. So you got to Jimmy V. So let's talk about, so basically relationships got you high. So you went from junior college right to North Carolina State?
Yeah.
Wow. Correct. And what kind of assistant were you at North Carolina State?
So at the time I was what was known as a volunteer assistant.
Okay.
And what, and the, and also at the time, the NCAA also had a category of part-time assistant. So to put that into perspective, Roy Williams, who was the head coach of Kansas and the head coach at North Carolina, he was the part-time assistant at North Carolina when he got the Kansas job.
I didn't know. Wow.
Yeah, because if you remember back to Dean Smith's staffs, it was Dean, Phil Ford, and Bill Guthridge. They were the three full-time coaches. You could only have three full-time coaches. But then you could have a part-time coach. And that doesn't mean that people weren't taken care of to the best of the ability, but a lot of your money would come from camps, like the aforementioned camps and those sorts of things. And in my case, I was a volunteer coach, but I was a full-time coach. I was on the bench. I can send you photos of me on the bench with Jim at the age of 24. But I was paid by JTV Enterprises, which was James T. Valvano Enterprises. So he paid me out of his pocket to be a coach at NC State, because you simply couldn't have, the NCAA allowed you to do that, but you could only have three full-time coaches, the head coach and then two full-time assistants. So that was the terminology then. It no longer exists.
Were you there for the national championship? Was that the
No, event? I started there in 1987. But I remember where I was in 1983 watching him. And when I got around to, you know, meeting with my junior college coach and we had the conversation about what I wanted to do, and I wrote the letter, he was right at the top of the list. And I said, I'm going to work for that dude someday, because like everybody else, I was fascinated by the run that they had in 83. You know, the way he carried himself, just right. Kind of this avant-garde, you know, swaggerish, completely confident in his dudes when nobody else in the world was, him running around the court, like all those sorts of things that go, man, that would be fun. Having absolutely no comprehension of how hard it would be to get there. And I'm grateful to this day that he chose me out of probably 1,000 candidates better than me.
Wow. What did you learn from Jimmy V then? We're going to have to go real quick. Yep. Round table of some of your other accomplishments all the way to where you were in Arkansas to last year or this year. Yeah.
One of the things when I go out speaking, Neil, one of the things I talk about is turning adversity into advantage and, you know, it's problem solving, but adversity to advantage is a way sexier way to say it. And Jim Valvano was probably the highest level person I've ever been around where he turned adversity into advantage. And I have a ton of examples. I know we don't have time for that, but I will just leave you with this one, is the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research is the biggest example. Like, I mean, you'd have to really push me you'd have to push back at me with a bigger example, because when he was doing the ESPY speech, he knew he was dying. He died 58 days after that speech.
Wow. Were you still working for him at that time? Or is that?
No. He had left NC State himself and had gotten into broadcasting. And I was off coaching now in the Continental Basketball Association. But turning adversity into advantage during that speech towards the end, if you go pick it up with about with 3 minutes to go, he talks about, okay, I have cancer. This may not save my life, but it may save someone else's life. And tonight I'm announcing the V Foundation for Cancer Research, therefore taking his own adversity and turning it into this unbelievable advantage. I think they've raised at this stage about $350 million over the course of time. And so I have a whole list of things that he would do and say where he could take a bad situation and just flip it. And I've never been around anybody as good at that as he was.
And Clay, let's just jump to that, because this is the kind of stuff I like, is the motivational stuff. And I'm really into, I don't care what people's spirituality is the law of attraction. And then especially the way their law is that we need to have a positive attitude. We got to be, even in bad adverse, there's a seed of benefit to any adversity, as Napoleon Hill said. And that basically you have to take these specific opportunities, whatever opportunities in your life, and live it. And not give it, and not look at like, oh my gosh, this is an awful situation. Well, what's kind of come up with it, how we can fix this, but we're not going to let the next opportunity, the next person we meet, the next interview we're going to do, the next call we're going to do, and we're going to allow and dwell upon what just happened. We have to keep going.
Yeah.
And we have to be very positive and believe we can do things. Because if you look at the most talented players in the world that you coached, because just to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, if we look at, I don't believe in this whole podcast introduction BS. I like to just go right to the heart of an interview. And this is going to definitely be on BPT TV channel 7 in Pittsburgh as well. Early, I'm going to put it out this month, because I love the fact that someone as knowledgeable as this and this, but he has two elite eights, three sweet 16s. He coached in the NBA. He coached in the CBA. He coached for USA. He was involved in USA basketball. And now he's just an assistant in Arkansas. The bottom line is Coach Mosier is a real winner. Okay. He worked hard to get where he is. How many of the champions you've worked with have that mindset that Jimmy V has to keep going and be able to overcome adversity to be successful?
Well, you know, first of all the great ones, you know, and great meaning relative to the level that you're at. So even when you played at Western Maryland, you know, you were probably one of them where you had that ability to just kind of, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps is an old school term, but like you just do that. And you have to, one of the things that sports teaches people, I think, at least it has for me, and if you're paying attention, what you're talking about, Neil, exactly what you're talking about is you have to solve those problems in real time or you're going to lose. And yeah. It happens when you're on the bench coaching a team, you know, clearly things aren't going exactly the way, you know, they're not just going swimmingly every single moment of the game. Like that's not how it works.
It's an up and down roller coaster.
Unless you're, you know, just not very good at it or whatever you're doing, you're having these constant conversations like, hey, we have to get out of this, or we have to get this person in the game and that person out of the game or whatever. It's a constant conversation about how do we solve, we have a problem, and that's okay. And so the first thing, as you know, you have to acknowledge you have the problem. The second thing is in the world of sports, you can't fix it tomorrow. You have to fix it now, and you have to do it succinctly, and you have to do it clearly, and you have to do it with a purpose. And you also have, and where that all comes from in my mind is you have to have planned that out before you got there.
Totally.
And in your mind, if you really know what you're doing, you're going to go, listen, if this starts to happen, we have to go to this personnel and change our strategy in this way. And I'll go back to Jim in this too. So he used to, so everybody in the world, and you probably remember this when you were playing at Western Maryland, is that all coaches would talk about the first 5 minutes of the game, the last 5 minutes of the half, the first 5 minutes of the second half, and the last 5 minutes of the game. Okay? Smart. Because those are key parts of it. However, Jim, and he actually had a name for it. He called the anatomy of the game. And we actually broke the game down into 8 5-minute segments for the 40 minutes of a college basketball game. And within each 5-minute segment, like let's say, so you play the first 5 minutes with your starters, and then you start to, then substitutions start to come into play, whether it's foul trouble or fatigue or matchups or whatever the situation is. But Jim had this thing where he believed like he would in his mind predict the score at a certain point in time, yeah. Even like in the second 5-minute segment. You go, listen, if we're down 18-12 in that second 5-minute segment, we know what we're trying to do is not working, and we're going to change it. And he would openly talk about that. And it was crazy. But you know what? He was almost always right. So I was with him full time for 2 years. We finished second in the ACC and first, and we won the ACC regular season championship in in 87. So like, it was just like, he just had this thing, and I've always carried that and tried to emulate that whenever possible. So that's, you know, that's the big part of it. It's like, you have to solve those problems now. Now in the world of business, you know, you might have 15 Zooms and, you know, it might take, you got to run it up the flagpole, and you got, you know, the board you have to run it by, but coaching, that's not how it works. You got to do it now.
And the thing is, in business, you have to make changes early in the process and plan and be willing to go through adversity and not let it bother you.
Yes.
And I look back at the time and why I'm able to be where I'm at and where I'm going, and I'm even better now, is how I had to handle adversity. And adversity is not as a bad thing. But I was asking this question. I'm going to point this final question with you. What do you see the superstars in everything? You said that they monitor and adjust. But what about their mindset? What positivity do they bring to the table, all the superstars that you've worked with in your career? That's why I can't wait to write your book.
Yeah.
That is help you write this book. Because all of those superstars, we look at all the people you've worked with. What do they have? Because this is what business people listening right now, how do they, what competitive edge do they have unlike everybody else? Because you have to be at a certain level, a certain place. When you talk about Western Maryland, I was at a certain level that I was better. I was one of my best players on the high school basketball team and most high school players, because only one or two high school players from every bench and goes and plays D3, you know, of good schools. We're not talking bad schools. So you had to have a certain level. What level do you see of that success level and that pill that these successful people have?
Well, you know, I'll go to the ones that everybody will know, and that, you know, they're going to stick out, and they've all been NBA MVPs, right? So I had the unbelievable fortune of being around Kobe, being around LeBron, and being around Steve Nash.
Okay.
And all three of those guys were multiple time MVPs.
Yeah. Right?
And the preparation that they go through just with their bodies and keeping themselves, like, that's their meal ticket is their talent and their athleticism and their, you know, their bodies. And even Steve Nash, like, people think he was this little guy. Like, he was so athletic, mm-hmm. so quick, so crafty. And he saw, he just saw the game in a different way. So number one was how they prepared their bodies, and they took it very, very seriously. And there's been legends out there that, not Steve so much, but Kobe and LeBron, out of their own pockets, would spend $1 million to $1.5 million just in maintaining their body.
Wow.
And I'm talking about masseuses and people, you know, I don't know if there's a word for people that stretch you, but Kobe used to have a woman that just stretched him. Like, that was her sole job. LeBron now has basically like his own personal guy that is his trainer in LA. Now he deals with everybody else too, but he's got his own trainer, came with him from Miami, went to Cleveland, and now he's in LA together. So number one is the sustenance of what they have put their bodies through.
So that's hard work.
Sustain it for many
preparation.
Yeah.
Preparation part of it. Yes.
And if you go way back, and I've been around him, never coached him because I'm not of that age. But if you go way back, Kareem actually was one of the first ones that employed yoga.
Yeah, I'm doing DDPY yoga to get back in shape for wrestling. It's resistance training by Diamond Dallas Page. It's unbelievable. I will my stretching, I'm already feeling my spine being stretched because I'm going to be back taking bumps sometimes.
Right.
And it's unbelievable resistance. I can't believe what yoga feels like. It's amazing. It's unbelievable.
The other element, and there's clearly more to it than this, but those guys at that level just have, and I, you know, people talk about the it factor, and the it factor sometimes is hard to define, but they also had this unbelievable way of bringing everybody else with them.
Yeah.
Like, because they were so great, and people, they led by example, they led verbally, they led in almost every way. You know, they led intellectually, they led emotionally, they led.
I think they had the mindset. They believed they could achieve every second, right?
Yes.
They never had. And that's where I was kind of going, but I'm love this. I mean, if, and no one's going to hire you as a business coach, trust me, you would be making way more money than a coach as a college basketball coach. I'm telling you, because what Great. You can do for a executive, oh my gosh, what I gained in this short period of time of just looking at, okay, how can I relate this to business? How can I relate this to now going out to raise the money for the Road Warriors film? How can I relate this to going back in my documentary and have the mind's first preparation, hard work, intensity? That's where the only successful people come. But then they also have to have it up here. And they also have to be able to overcome when things don't go their way. And that's when you talk about adversity. Clay, just is there a place that people follow you and stuff? We're definitely going to have a part two, part three. I know we're going to stay in touch for a lot of things, but is there a quick place we can go?
Yeah, you can go to Twitter at CMOSER1162. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, and that is at CAMLAMCMM, which is the initials of all three of my children. That's why it's plotted out that way. I'm on Threads. I'm on TikTok, although I don't know how to use it yet.
Oh, well, that's why
you met me. Twitter is the best place to find me. That's CMOJER1162.
That's why you met me. So we're going to definitely stay in touch and hit it off. Great talking to you, Clay. Brought me back. One other thing I'll announce today. I'm crazy. This is one thing. In 2024, I said there's nothing I'm not going to do. I am going to come back to basketball as well after this comeback in wrestling to the senior Olympics, not senior Olympics, but the start of the senior games and see where I can go. Because, you know, once you start, you turn 50, I'm 51, you could start playing in the seniors. Did you know that? And then there's certain things. So I'm going to do that as well for fun. I don't know what I'll end up being able to do, but I was out shooting with my son and was hitting three pointers from half court, and I'm 6'10". So I wish they would let me shoot the ball like they let little big guys shoot now. They always said, get underneath. I could hit the shot all the time outside. Yeah. Go figure how they changed the game.
They were trying to put you in a box way back then.
Yeah, keep me in the box.
Well, let me give you a little motivation about being over 50 and moving into the master's realm. Mm-hmm. So I had a former colleague, and you'll know this name, I think. His name is Judd Bushler. Judd played for Lute Olson at the University of Arizona. He was Steve Kerr's best friend. And he and I worked together with the Lakers. He was on three of the Chicago Bulls world championship teams. And then he had two daughters that went into the volleyball world. So Judd started learning how to play volleyball. And he got into Masters volleyball when he turned 50 and was the MVP of the world games, like in his very first event.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. But I wouldn't be looking at that way. I would just look, it's just another thing to do, but I want to at least be from getting this back in the shape of wrestling. I miss basketball as well. So I was about to message my next client. All right. We have another show. All right. So last thing for you. Let's definitely connect and have a call. Find out like what your goals are, what you're trying to do. I think this was a perfect time for Derek to introduce me, right? Did you coach this year or you left before that?
No. I was working for the Minnesota Timberwolves organization right after I left Arkansas. But then they didn't have a substantial place for me to go. I saw my family three times in 8 months that year. And I'm trying to build this speaking business and this consulting business while I follow my kids around and watch every single.
I'm going to make you a rock star, because that's the missing point. No one knows who you are. That's what I got to change.
Great.
Okay. All right, Clay. I'll be reaching out, bro. Okay. See you. Thanks. Okay. Bye. Bye.